You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 3rd of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Carefully selected content, top-class print quality, and a supreme eye for design aesthetic. Just some of the factors at play when crafting a premium print title. But whether you're in Bandung or Brazil, there's one pitfall that'll kill even the most aspirational publisher. It's distribution, and it's not for dummies. Today on The Stack. On today's programme, we're casting our spell over the print world as we discuss the perils, pleasures and pitfalls of distribution.
The model of distribution has clearly to catch up, and it's what it is doing clearly all around the world by restructuring in order to first tackle the cost, reduce the cost of distribution.
Plus, we'll hear about some of the titles that have excited Steve Watson as he prepares for this year's Stack Awards.
It's absolutely flying. You know, really sort of big, proper, serious magazine stories in here.
And touching down in Brazil, we'll find out where the country's literary elite turned for intellectual inspiration. All that ahead on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack. Plenty ahead as ever. We'll peruse some titles and discuss distribution with our regular contributor Steve Watson in a moment. But first, let's check in with our editor-in-chief Tyler Brulé. He's touched down in Murano this week, from where we can hear from him right now. Tyler, very good morning to you. I guess we should start, though, by looking back to last week and what was a highly successful special edition of this programme.
What a week it was, Tom. I think if we just rewind about 7 days, it was quite surprising to sort of walk in last Saturday morning, see a couple of familiar faces in the audience, but a lot of new faces. But what was great, chatting to everyone afterwards, everyone paid up listeners of the program. I think what really trickled out a little bit later and was a bit full force late in the afternoon, everyone saying, well, when's the next one?
Well, and I don't know, we can maybe just leave them to ponder that whilst we carry on planning on that very theme. But Tyler, let's dig into though some of the themes that were discussed. And it was interesting talking to, or hearing from some real key players across the markets and across sort of genres of titles. A lot of, I don't know, fairly kind of similar views, particularly when it comes to the need for some fresh thinking in terms of distribution.
Well, I think a couple of things emerged. What was really interesting was also, I think, even how much it's influenced our own thinking on the editorial floor. I think distribution as well. There were so many topics. I think right away Andrew sort of just seized on what we hear from probably two or three people on stage, but even from the audience as well, and even the discussion afterwards about the long read, the need for the long read, and how people really felt that this was something that was a bit of a dying art on one side, and the titles that they really gravitated toward were just those. The other side, I would say, is just the distribution model, and I think it's raised so many questions. Of course, we've done our own little project with the Kiosk Cafe, but I think many people are saying that this is, everyone really needs to start to talk, everyone in the chain, from the paper company to the distributor to the wholesaler to the publisher, to the retailer, everyone needs to get involved because everyone has a role to play in this, obviously.
And Tyler, I wonder, that theme about the need for more dialogue, is that something presumably you encounter wherever in the world you are? I mean, you're in Murano right now, but I guess that's something that we always come back to, whether it's about how to make sure that Monocle is responding to its readers' interests or across all of the business, really. That idea of, actually going face-to-face, and a lot of people maybe lose sight of that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it's, as you said, it's not just isolated. I think you can visit many corners of the world and you're hearing the same stories. I do think, maybe not necessarily in Murano, but I think certainly in the German-speaking world, I think particularly Switzerland and Germany are two markets that I think really get it right in terms of the vast, the expansive kiosks, and also publishing groups that are still willing to do different things, to try things out. So I think that and I guess that was maybe a topic we didn't actually point or we didn't cover too much, and this is we'll leave everyone hanging a little bit, but I think that's an area that I would inject a little bit more into the next time we do this, and we will do it again for sure. Probably London next time, Tom, but I think we could definitely look for more sort of inspiration. I think we could look for more benchmarks the next time we do it. Before Christmas, probably not. I think we should, actually, Tom, I think we should put the challenge down to all of our other weekly programs, see what they can do in terms of a live audience program.
There you go, people. You heard it here first. Tyler's laying down the gauntlet. Tyler, great to speak with you as always. We'll catch up again very soon. Our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, on the line from Murano here on The Stack. This is The Stack on Monocle 24, and we're joined now by one of our trusted allies in the print world. Monocle 24 listeners will know him well. He's the founder of innovative magazine distributor Stack, which he started 3 years ago in an attempt to help independent publishers find a wider readership. He knows the print scene back to front, or should we say cover to cover. Steve Watson, welcome back to The Stack. Good to have you with us.
Good to see you, Tom.
Ever. Where should we start? Should we start with a bit of Stack business, as in your Stack magazines rather than our Stack programme? Exciting times. You're in the midst of, well, soliciting entries, aren't you, still for your, is it the inaugural Stack Awards?
It's the first one, that's right. We're in the thick of it. We're running the Stack Awards for the first time this year. The idea being to recognise the very best work done by independent publishers. And importantly, I want to do it properly. So that means people have to send me their magazines. They have to pay a small amount, so £30 to enter a category. And then the magazines get shipped out to judging panel who are kind of based all over the world. They are hand-picked.
Do you think that we are getting to the point where you need to be, even if you're a creative, you need to be a sort of mini entrepreneur? You have to be that way. You at least have to, even if you understand that you don't have the skill set to do it, you need to be aware of that so that you can get, you know, get alongside some people who do. Is it, for better or worse, going to be vital or necessary for people to do that?
I think so. There's not to take anything away from the conventional distributors, and you know, kind of the, I'm really encouraged actually by the number of small independent magazine shops that we've got popping up, especially in this country now. I hear there's a new one just opened
well,
in London.
It's funny you should mention that. Well, no, of course. I mean, the Kiosk Cafe, you know, Monocle's sort of latest, you know, foray into this world is doing exactly that. It's looking at, you know, is there a role for savvy publishers to play more directly? You know, more hands on. Is there a distribution model that can get an overhaul? And I think something that certainly Tyler's talked about, and if you listened to The Stack last week, you would have heard a lot of his panel echoing the same thing. We talk a lot often about innovation, certainly in the independent magazine sector, but are people being innovative enough when it comes to the distribution models? And again, I think probably Tyler thought perhaps not, and there was a space in the market.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you say, there are more of them, and that alone, I guess, is a great comfort to someone who's, you know, doing what you do.
Exactly. For me, anything that gets more of these magazines out in front of more people is a good thing. But I think that then from a publisher's point of view, it's not enough for you just to think, oh, fantastic, I'm going to get my mag out into these shops. Because you're then still relying on someone walking down the street. You know, it blows my mind whenever I think about like the number of things that have to happen for someone to buy a magazine in a shop one day. It just amazes me that anyone ever buys anything. So I think it's really important that publishers should think about who are their specific audience, like where are those people going? And so that's when you see something like Noble Rot's wine magazine, and in my local off-license, which is like a rather upmarket off-license that sells expensive bottles of wine, Noble Rot is sitting on the counter just next to the till, and it's like everything is perfectly designed around it. It's small, it sits on the counter there. You've just spent £10 on a bottle of wine, so actually I think it's £8 maybe
in
for
the ballpark,
actually that makes total sense. Yes, I'm going to buy that at that point. So that for me is an example of where publishers should be thinking.
Well, in a way, that kind of elegantly, Steve, brings us onto our magazine review for the week, because we can talk about some things that have caught your eye, for good or bad. We don't know yet, but we'll get into it. You've got a sack of mags. Let's get cracking. Where should we start? Why not with what is on top of the pile right now?
Okay, all right. So the top of the pile is The Outpost. And this is what we sent out to Stack subscribers last month. The Outpost, I'm sure you know, is a magazine and published in Beirut and concerned with life across the Arab region, and very specifically in looking at the realities of what's going on there, but not getting kind of sucked into sort of like, you know, pessimism and doom and gloom. It's a magazine of opportunities. I was so proud to send this one out because I think that it's not a mag that a lot of people will have come across. But actually, in terms of the message it's trying to convey, I think is very important. And it does it in such an elegant kind of, with such a beautiful lightness of touch that just the whole thing, I think, it's one of those magazines that you just see issue on issue just getting better and better and better.
And one of the things I like about it from a kind of the design aesthetic point of view is there's a sort of an easy, I don't know, I think you just said elegance. There's a kind of a refinement to it almost. And there's a nice, I don't know, there's a sort of a gentle colour palette too. An inviting read from everything from, yeah, the picture selection to the layouts to the colour to the feel actually of the cover. It coaxes you in. Let's move on from that sort of, I don't know, sort of pinkish, reddish colour palette. It's all about blue. Your next selection.
Well, a bit of blue, quite literally. So this is Spring Magazine. Now, this is one of the great things about running the awards. I really thought when I opened the awards up, I thought I knew the magazines that were going to come through. Mm. And actually, I've been blown away by the number of magazines that have come through that I've never heard of before. And this is an example of that. It's a magazine called Spring. It's published in Berlin, and it's an illustrative magazine. The theme of this one is kind of like private, and so that, you know, you've got a lady in the altogether on the cover, and there are lots of kind of stories through there of, like, you know, kind of people's sort of like very private lives. And it's a brilliant read, and really interestingly from a female perspective as well. So there's something very interesting going on here, I think, in terms of a great big slab of a magazine with like really cool contemporary illustration that has this like very clear feminist message, but that's not banging you over the head with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's flicks of this which are in English, but I almost wish...
So everything actually is, if the work is in English or if it's in German, kind of there are translations at the bottom.
I mean, there's some absolutely fantastic artwork in this. And this is a new one on me, Steve, I must say, as well. Incredible pieces.
This is kind of, I guess it's the reason for starting the awards. There's so much of this good stuff out there. And that, you know, so me and Jeremy from Mad Culture last year made our last printout of the year, a sort of look back at the best magazines from 2014. And that was great and fun and everything, but obviously you're only going to get the magazines that me and Jeremy like already. So you're really narrowing your focus. With these awards, the whole point of the up and submissions is kind of, you know, send us the magazines that are good at the moment. If you think your magazine is up there, send it in.
Steve laying down the gauntlet to you right now, listeners. That is a thing of beauty. Love that one. So what else?
Okay, all right then. Let's crash through them. So we've now got the new Gym Class. I sent Gym Class out as one of our sampler offers. So Sampler is like the weekly magazine sale that I run. And this issue of Gym Class broke all records, sold out so quickly. In fact, we put an extra allocation on and it's still only lasted till like 3 PM or something. And I think that, you know, a lot of this, so Stephen, the editor and creative director, mentions in the front that his last cover was phenomenally successful. So that was the one that's kind of nobody cares about your oh-so-cool kickstarted blah, blah, blah magazine. And so he talks about kind of the pressure of how do you follow a cover like that generated so much conversation. And so they've gone with black and white illustration of Anna Wintour. They've refreshed the logo, so they've got a new logo on there. And, you know, I mentioned before magazines that just keep getting better and better. Gym Class feels like it's got a rocket up its bum at the moment. Like, it's absolutely flying. You know, really sort of big, proper, serious magazine stories in here. Like, as in stories about people making magazines. But then still with Stephen's, like, fanboy exuberance and, like, kind of OMG love on every page. I just think he's doing great stuff.
I love the... there's a sort of a great Anna Wintour. This is their cover piece. And there's a kind of a crazy, I don't know, frenetic energy to even how these stories are told. Just if you're looking at, you know, fonts, layouts, it's hugely energetic, yeah. I guess is the word. It looks terrific.
It's a magazine enthusiast's magazine. Yeah. So I think, you know, anyone listening to this programme, if you don't already have a copy of Gym Class, you probably should get one. He's only printed, I think, 1,000 copies of this one, so it's going to go.
Tyler Brûlé's in there on page 6 as well.
Your very own Tyler Brûlé.
I do support these things. Steve Watson, thanks as ever for joining us here on The Stack.
Thank you.
You're with The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Now, as any publisher worth his pages will know, there's no ceiling when it comes to crafting quality content. But words and pictures aside, there's one element that can quickly kill even the most aspirational publication. Distribution, the magic word that can make or break a business. Who better to discuss the many bends and folds than Karine Neverjans from DistriPress, the international organisation that brings together publishers and distributors. In the lead up to their 60th anniversary congress in Brussels, I spoke to Karine and asked her about the intricacies of navigating the distribution minefield.
This edition is a bit peculiar, for we are celebrating our 60th birthday, which is really meaningful that such a congress is going through decades now. And it's still very vivid and very lively. We're waiting in the center of Europe for about a little bit more than 600 people, all coming from different countries and both publishers or distributors. And as a special event, we have a special program for our forum where we try to really tackle what is at stake in matter of strategy. And as well, we have an opening underlying still the very political side and the importance of press distribution to relay the publishers all around the world. And this is why our Congress will be opened by ex-Prime Minister of Belgium, current MP Guy Verhofstadt, who will speak about Europe distribution and as well freedom of press, and to be free to read and speak all around the world, which is a key thing. Then it will be followed by what for us is very key, which is the evolving press models, which will be shared by Juan Senor. And in order to really catch up what is in the air and what we are all preparing in terms of innovation, in terms to change our business models and really meet the consumer trends.
Karine, can I ask you briefly about that? Because a lot of people have said things, you know, we hear, oh, you know, print is dead, print is dying. And obviously we don't believe that at all here at Monocle, and I'm sure you don't either. But you talked about the need for innovation there. Is it the distribution models, perhaps, that need to catch up a little more to the new economy? Publishing is showing that it can respond. It's maybe been a bit slow in places. But do the models of distribution, do you think, need to catch up with the new economic challenges?
Yes, the model of distribution has clearly to catch up, and it's what it is doing clearly all around the world by restructuring in order to first tackle the cost, reduce the cost of distribution, introducing more efficiency into the process. So this is very important, but as well developing a new way of working. And digital is getting into this way of thinking. For example, Prestalis in France is developing a lot into the digital market, whereas it's a distributor, setting up the Zins subsidiary, which will start up to develop a platform of digital with all the publishers' content proposed into this platform. It will be called Zins Infinite. So this is kind of an innovative development, which is a key thing for our sector. But not only with digital, but as well cost thinking, digital, but as well commercial thinking. And we are, all the distributors are really trying to catch up more the needs of the client, and through studies and marketing improvement to propose much better and efficient draw adjustments thinking as well, in order to really place the titles according to their buying targets.
Karine, can I ask you about integration? Because obviously what DistriPress does so well is it brings publishers and distributors together literally under one roof, as in the case in Brussels, and that facilitates negotiation, distribution agreements and so on, and those kind of commercial agreements. Do you think we will see, or we perhaps should see, publishers and distributors working in a more integrated way, perhaps more overlap between them, not just at events like yours, but in terms of how they structure their day-to-day business?
Yes, definitely. I think it's very important. Very often among the distributors, the publishers are asking, for example, if this cover would be a good one, or this angle would be a good one on this market. So it's a one way in terms of sharing on the content some advice. But as well, thinking of reshaping the distribution structure in order to meet the need of the publishers. And these are lots of roundtables which are set up to really understand and to really fit the whole distribution line in order to be online with the editorial line. It's particularly the case in companies where the publishers are as well shareholders, which is the case in France, for example, with Prestalis, where there's a complete integration of how we structure according to the publisher's needs. I think it's a key issue. And of course, such congress as DistroPress Congress, where we share experiences and it's not only win the congress, but as well where there is a follow-up afterwards in order to set up the business in a proper way, which is very, very interesting.
Corinne, just finally, you've mentioned, of course, it's the 60th anniversary edition. Incredible changes to the scene from 1955 to where we find ourselves now. Let's look ahead. Let's say we're having this conversation, I don't know, after the 70th anniversary edition. How different do you think the landscape will be? And do you think that you and the various delegates will be there or are prepared for those challenges?
Oh, we try to work hard for that. Moving a lot of things within DistroPress. We are restructuring DistroPress itself. There is a big rethinking of the strategy in order to be really sure that we meet the needs of our members, for we have members which are kind of clients to DistroPress. So we must be really sure that the Congress we provide is something that is useful for all our members. What we are trying to do is that we are going to move next year the representative office to London, so to be closer than Zurich to our customers, to be able to meet them on a regular basis. And we will definitely very, very much improve our website because it's a huge network. We can share best practice. We can share a lot of things to the website so that this DistroPress will not be only a one-shot congress every year basis, but as well, we will communicate to that website in order to exchange and share things. So I think in a 10 years time, probably we will still be different than from today, but still there because there is a very, very solid industry with a very harsh determination and a lot of enthusiasm to improve and to stick to the need on the press models.
Karine Neverjans there from DistroPress. And we'll have more from the world of print distribution as the organisation's 60th anniversary Congress gets underway during the next week right here on Monocle 24. Now it's time for that regular feature of the programme where one of our Midori House editors and contributors speaks in praise of a favourite newsstand staple. This week it's the turn of Monocle 24's Gaia Lutz, who's chosen a favourite from back home in Brazil, Piauí magazine.
So the mag I've chosen to speak about today is a monthly publication from my home country, Brazil. It's called Piauí. It was founded in 2006, so it's fairly newish, by a filmmaker and documentarist called João Moreira Salles. Incidentally, it's a guy whose films and documentaries I adore. I like the magazine both because of its high quality and originality of content, but also because of its form and format. Not only aesthetically, the magazine looks beautiful. It's printed on a very high quality paper. I think it's printed on paper that books are printed in. It also has a lot of cartoons and it has sort of a retro feel, but also the form of its text, which is what is called new journalism or literary journalism. So it's interesting because the stories are told. So it's not about facts or figures or numbers. It very much reads like a bunch of essays or chronicles or short stories. It reminds a lot of some American magazines and also some magazines that existed in Brazil before no longer exist. So in a way, it's a very different magazine from what exists in the Brazilian market today. So it reminds me a lot of a magazine like The New Yorker or the style like The New York Times, because it's really telling a story. It places a lot of emphasis on details, on setting a space, on, you know, describing how the person that's being interviewed is dressed, how he looks, the little twitches he has with his hand. So I think it places a lot of emphasis in this very slow reading. Even João Moreira Salles, the editor, he called it journalism without hurry. So it's a very slow read. It's very much a Sunday read, I would say. A lot of people compare it to The New Yorker, but whilst The New Yorker talks about America, he wanted to make a magazine that was about Brazil, about Brazilian characters, Brazilian values, and so forth. Whilst I was reading a bit about the magazine, I found a little logo they use, which is great. I think it sums it up very well. I translated it. It says, "A monthly magazine of journalism, ideas, and humor. We publish for those who like reading. Anything goes. Politics, literature, economics, TV, architecture, cinema, football, and dentistry. As long as the dentist is interesting or the root canal revolutionary." So it's really about that. It's about telling a story well. It has no sort of editorial focus. It's known for its writers to choose themes that they want. It doesn't have to be things that are on the news right now. So, for example, the issue I have here, which is last month's issue, has stories as varied as, you know, a profile on our new director of aviation in Brazil. And then there's also another article about scientists that discovered sort of the equations of our brain, which also reminds me a bit of Intelligent Life. There's also a goodbye to a very famous bookstore in Brazil that closed down. So, I mean, it's very varied. The authors have complete autonomous editorial freedom about what they're writing and what they want to say. It's quite a quirky magazine. Something that I like is its logo. It uses it sometimes in some pages and in the cover, like very discreetly small. It's a penguin with a beret with a star, very much like the Che Guevara beret. It points to, you know, the dilution of sort of a revolutionary force into a pop icon, representing a lot of the irreverence and ethos of Piauí itself.
Our own Guy Lutz there, singing the praises of Piauí. And that is just about all we have time for on this week's show. Thanks to our producer, Ben Rylan, researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and our editor, Nathan Cooper. Comments or queries are welcome as ever. Drop us a line at info@monocle.com. Don't forget to join us again at the same time next week, or tune in again at monocle.com or via iTunes. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Until next time, goodbye.